Coming up on Tech News Today, was Tay a sociopath or just a parrot? Is Google working on an Echo-like device? I think so. Why are robots and chatbots so commonly female? And do-it-yourself VR. Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1477, recorded Thursday, March 24th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Right now, get free expedited FedEx shipping when you go to ring.com/TNT.
And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT.
And by Igloo Software. Igloo is an intranet you'll actually like. It connects people with the information they need to do their best work. Try it for free at igloosoftware.com/twit or sign up for a live demo to see it in action. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about technology news with people.
That's why it's called that.
Yeah, that's why it's called Tech News Today, because we talk about tech news with people who love tech news.
On today.
Mm-hmm. Today. I am Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. Today on Tech News Today, we're talking with Aaron Carson from Tech Republic. How's it going, Aaron?
It's great. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure to get you on the show here. We've got some, I think, some pretty interesting stuff to talk about today. Very, very broad and all-encompassing. Why don't we dive right in with this, which I'm surprised this hasn't happened already. VentureBeat has the scoop that Google is working hard on bringing a live streaming video service to release to compete with Twitter's Periscope and Facebook Live. And rest in peace, Meerkat. The service will likely be called YouTube Connect and should have an iOS and Android app when it's officially released. Sources say users will be able to stream video directly from their mobile device's camera to YouTube, along with chat and tagging features. A lot of what we've kind of come to expect out of live video streaming apps that we've used so far. Think this will be a success, or is this kind of late to the game? It feels like to me, but...
Well, it feels a little bit late to the game to me. I think that they're trying to obviously compete. They need to get like the people that have left to go to Snapchat and do their video there, and you know, other places to Facebook. I guess some, you know, some YouTube watchers have gone to Facebook, and so yeah, I think that to just go and create exactly what these places that Twitter and Facebook already has, I would hope they would do something different. What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing is that we're past a point in time when people are wondering if the whole live streaming thing is going to stick around. It's at least survived a year, mm-hmm. at least most of them have, you know. So, yeah, it makes sense that, you know, Google always sort of wants to be the place you go to for things. So, yeah, they'll tack on a live streaming app.
I mean, YouTube has had live streaming already. I think the difference here, of course, is kind of bringing it into a mobile app. And in fact, you could do this a number of ways already. It's just YouTube doesn't have its official mobile version. YouTube offers live streaming through its site, through YouTube Creator Studio on the desktop. YouTube Gaming allows you to do live streaming of your device's screen, and it uses, you know, it kind of superimposes your front facing camera. So there's a little bit of that streaming directly to YouTube from your mobile device, but it's not like just point a camera at something and go. It kind of involves that gaming aspect. The HTC Re is a hardware device that came out, I don't know, about a year and a half ago, and pretty much its sole purpose was to stream directly to YouTube. And I remember when that came out, I was like, why can't you do this from the YouTube app? Because so many people would use this. This was a year and a half ago, before the whole trend, you know, or resurgence, whatever you want to call it, of live streaming video. And then even before that, the Sony Xperia phones on Android have a live to YouTube app from 2 years ago that allowed you to stream live to YouTube. So I'm just, it just kind of boggles my mind that they didn't do this much sooner. They could have been ahead of the game so long ago. Instead, it kind of feels like a little bit of catch up, but I think later, you know, better later than never.
Yeah, I think when we talked about Facebook getting into mobile live streaming, there was somebody, you know, that said, why won't YouTube do this? Why can't you do this on YouTube? So I guess maybe they heard that. And so mobile live streaming seems to be a specific niche. Like only some people want to do it all the time, and only some people want to watch it. But so I guess maybe everybody has to have it, even though it's not like you can't just survive on it. Like Meerkat figured that out. It can't be your only thing.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, YouTube certainly has a lot of other things.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Sense. So, yeah. All right. Well, in other news of companies owned by Google creating things that other people have created already, the Google-owned home automation company Nest is struggling, and that might be due in part to the fact that they are not the Amazon Echo. Earlier today, The Information posted a report on Nest and on the company's CEO, Tony Fadell. The report reveals an exodus of employees, a corporate culture problem, and a failure to innovate. Nestled, no pun intended, in the information piece is a hint at an Amazon Echo-like home assistant that Google is developing without the help of Nest.
Aaron, are you an Echo user? Megan is. I do not have one, although I'm very intrigued. What do you think?
I so badly want to be. That is the device that is on my list of like the next kind of tech gadget to buy. But, you know, something that was really interesting to me is not long ago, the CNET appliances folks, you know, they have this project happening here in Louisville with a smart home. And they actually made the decision to replace the Nest with the Echo Bee, which I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it was a really, really interesting little kind of crux, I thought, because to this point, it does feel like Nest is just so dominant in that area. But then you read a report like this, and it kind of shows you just how fickle and fleeting that things can be. And all of a sudden, they're maybe perhaps not quite so on top as we thought.
Yeah, I mean, Nest really kind of came out of the gates screaming, you know, however many years ago when we first heard about the Nest thermostat, and oh, it's made by the same people behind the iPod, and oh, wow, they're going to do for thermostats what, you know, they did for digital music, which sounded weird, but then they kind of proved on that promise. Google, of course, bought Nest. Google really, Nest division inside of Google/Alphabet really has not done a whole lot since that acquisition a couple of years ago. Pretty much all we've seen since then, for the most part, from a public release sort of sense, is the Nest Cam. And that's not even a new product designed within the Nest division at Alphabet. That was basically the Dropcam acquisition and kind of, you know, repurposed, took some of that IP and made something new. So it's kind of surprising because, man, I feel like it had so much potential. You really thought that once Google kind of took Nest into its nest, that it would, you know, they would create some really interesting, crazy things together. Or, you know, last year at Google I/O, they talked about Brillo, which is kind of the Internet of Things OS that Google has kind of gotten behind. So you kind of wondered, okay, well, then they have Nest. Maybe there's going to be this like crazy move to Internet of Things within Google. And yet still, we're kind of here wondering what's going on. We're not seeing anything. It had so much potential.
Yeah, and it kind of speaks to the, you know, the overall culture, this tendency toward iterating so quickly. Mm-hmm. And so you get this idea that if you are not seeing movement in some direction in a relatively quick manner, then it's like, oh, man, something is really wrong and they're dying
right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's what Alphabet is saying, you know, because you would hope, like you said, that, oh, they got bought by Alphabet. They're going to, you know, do something amazing now. Or you get just swallowed up by this machine and there's all this bureaucracy and you know, some forcing to innovate. I mean, that's what this report said. That they're really saying, like, you need to come out with this security system now, which I was a little frightened about. Like, if someone's going to come up with a home, like, internet-connected security system, you would hope that they would take the time to make sure that it's actually, you know, as secure as it can be.
I wonder how much time they've taken, though, at this point. Like, you have to have an end game, right? Like, any time a product, and security, I completely agree, by the way, don't rush a security product to market, because I'm sure that happens a lot, and we, you know, the user ends up running, kind of having shouldering the risk of that. But you have to have an end game. I wonder how long they've been working on this. It could, you know, I mean, what we're realizing from Nest as a division is they're not releasing things. And, you know, as a result, and a result especially of the exodus of people, I think like 50 people have left, you know, over the course of the last year or something like that. I mean, that's a lot of people. That spells kind of bad. That's a bad sign for that division inside. As for the Amazon Echo kind of competitor, I've, you know, ever since Echo has kind of been doing so well and Google Now is an interesting product, I've just kind of continually wondered why Google hasn't done this yet either. Like, it makes perfect sense. I know Google's kind of stance on this is, well, you don't need that because you've got your phone in your pocket and it's got Google Now and it does these things. But obviously there is a need, there is a desire to have an internet appliance that you can just talk to.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not just all about thermostats anymore.
That's right. I don't know. I'd buy it. So first Nintendo came for your mobile device, and now Sony is doing the same. Sony has announced that its new company called Forward Works, which is based in Tokyo, will focus on game development for mobile devices on iOS and Android. The new company will release full-fledged games based on PlayStation IP and, you know, recognizable character brands, all that kind of stuff. And all those years of game development expertise from its consoles will kind of go into the game development here as well. It should be noted that this is not PlayStation or Sony's PlayStation's first foray into mobile. They had PlayStation Mobile as an effort that was actually shut down last year, kind of deemed a failure. They were bringing some PS1 games to Sony Xperia devices and trying to kind of bridge, you know, create a bridge between indie games and the PlayStation Vita handheld, but it just kind of didn't work. So trying another stab at it. Are you a gamer, Erin? Is this the kind of thing that gets you excited?
I like mobile games more so than other things. I actually kind of grew up without video games, and so never made the jump to, like, getting a console, right, which is a terrible thing because I cover virtual reality. But I do think that it kind of speaks to the idea that, I mean, you know, I was just looking at something from DigiCapital that was projecting that, you know, the revenue forecast for mobile games by 2018 is like $45 billion. So that's really difficult to ignore.
Yeah.
And even if you're not someone who, you know, is sort of sitting on the fence as to whether they want to buy a gaming console, you probably have a smartphone and you probably are going to download something, whether it's Angry Birds or Stack or, you know, Monument Valley or something like that. So it's, yeah, it's definitely not a bad area to try and kind of create a footprint in.
Yeah, especially if they're taking a lot of that kind of IP and those characters and stuff and roping it in. Nintendo is doing this, yes, but they're doing it on kind of a different kind of way. Nintendo seems to be kind of making committing themselves to making mobile experiences that are kind of an attachment to their console. And this would be an effort to actually make games that stand on their own, but recognizable brands essentially within the PlayStation universe. It's starting in Japan and Asia. They didn't really expand on whether it would, you know, move beyond Japan or Asia if it was a success, but I have a hard time thinking that if it was successful, they wouldn't do that. Because like you say, Erin, like, mobile gaming, it's so ripe for the picking as far as making money. It's a lost opportunity if you don't get in on it.
So, Erin, I know you cover VR, like you said. Do you see in the big companies, are they making a similar push in VR as they are to in mobile games? Or is one greater than the other as far as you've seen?
Ooh, that's hard. You know, with so I'm trying to think of how to put this. With VR, you know, I think that the focus at this point, the flashiest thing that you see is gaming and entertainment. Mm-hmm. And then you have all the other ways it kind of gets fragmented out. I think the thing with mobile right now is it's just more of a proven market. But the projections for what the, you know, VR industry will be like in a few years are still in the billions of dollars. I think something like $30 billion by 2020. But that's more divided up amongst a few different areas and not just gaming. That makes sense.
That does. So although neither the government nor the security company in question will confirm, late yesterday Reuters reported that the FBI has hired Israeli digital forensics company Cellebrite to crack the San Bernardino shooter's work phone. So this is just in the rumor-ish stage. right now. Of course, Monday, the FBI backed out of their hearing that was supposed to happen on Tuesday with Apple. And there's been a lot of speculation about, because they said they could crack it on their own. Thank you very much. They didn't need Apple's help. So we've been sort of speculating, and lots of people online have been speculating who it is that can do this. So now it's apparently this Israeli firm. What do you guys think?
Well, I think the most important fact out of this is that we are one step closer to knowing that it might not, in fact, be John McAfee that had anything to do with this.
Yes. Yeah, well, he said it wasn't also. Yeah. So they're trying this. I guess they're trying the technique on older phones. That's from what I've read. So that on other phones so that they can't because you could possibly this technique could possibly delete all the information that was supposedly on this phone.
So you don't want to step in to help the FBI and then, oops, yeah. I guess I deleted it. Anyways, moving on.
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting things for me about this little turn in events is just that question of whether the broader aim of all this was to set legal precedents or not. And the director of the FBI has been like, no, we are just trying to get into this phone. But you just got to wonder sometimes. I've spent a lot of time thinking about this case in sort of various analogous ways to First Amendment law, because that's an area where from time to time, you know, in order to protect overarching rights and whatnot, you kind of have to side with a group or whatever that makes you feel a little scuzzy. Mm-hmm. But and I think that there's definitely some play in there. But you also know that a lot of the time, some of the cases that make it far up the chain are set up for the sake of establishing precedent. So yeah, they say definitely not. But I'm right. Super curious.
And it's dangerous to kind of venture forth into territory where you aren't more than likely assured that you have a good chance of setting the precedent that you actually want. Mm-hmm. Regardless of whether this kind of makes it to that point, I think, this isn't the last time you see this sort of thing. I think at some point it comes up again, maybe organically, maybe not. But, you know, I think the desire is still there. I would have to imagine that as far as the Justice Department is concerned, the desire to be able to have access to devices and get around these security protections is still there. And that isn't taken away, you know, once they find a way into this device. So I'm sure we see it again.
Definitely interesting to know that these forensics companies exist, that lots of them exist that can do this. I mean, I don't want to get too far into world politics that doesn't have to do with technology. But, you know, this Israeli company has probably, according to the Inverse article, broken into lots of terrorists' phones. And they have the ability to do this. And, you know, their ideas about privacy there and looking into what their citizens are doing is different than our ideas. Mm-hmm. And it's again, good for us to be having this discussion and learning more about this.
Sure.
After the break, remember that Microsoft chat bot we talked about yesterday? It's offline now. Oh, you can find out why after the break. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode, the Ring Video Doorbell. Now, we all know what a doorbell is and what it sounds like.
This one sounds like that.
That's what this one sounds like. That my doorbell sounds like this. It means a package is being delivered or friends are coming over for dinner. It also could possibly be the sound of someone planning to rob you. Over 95% of home break-ins happen during the day, and burglars almost always start by ringing your doorbell to see if someone is home before they pillage all your possessions. With the Ring Video Doorbell, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. Ring's advanced motion detection alerts you even if someone doesn't ring the doorbell. With Ring Video Doorbell, you can talk to delivery people, and you can keep an eye on your package. If someone tries to mess with it, you get an instant alert and an HD video of the whole scene. It's like having a neighbor keep an eye on your home 24/7. I love my Ring Video Doorbell. I just reinstalled it last night. I had to charge the battery. That's the way I use it, with the rechargeable battery, which is so easy. You just put it on your charger, let it charge. It takes like 4 to 6 hours, depending on your charging system, and then you just hook it back up. It's got a little screwdriver with in case you were wondering, like, what if someone just takes it? They can't, because it has these specific little screws and a very
proprietary.
That's the word I'm looking for. Ring also has a new doorbell that's $249. That starts shipping late April. And you can get that one, too, if that one floats your boat more than the one that's currently out there. Put your mind at ease and protect your home with the video doorbell. Time Magazine and USA Today named one of their top 10 gadgets. Go to ring.com/TNT for free expedited FedEx shipping. That's ring.com/TNT with Ring. You are always home.
All right. So, excuse me. My voice is cracking like a 19-year-old. We spoke at length on the show about Microsoft's 19-year-old American girl AI bot, Tay. And no doubt we already saw some early red flags in some of her responses to queries on Twitter. Well, today, Microsoft has pulled Tay offline after she was influenced to parrot hate speech, tweeted out support for some pretty vile things, to say the least. Joining us to talk about the deactivation of Tay is Alex Kantrowitz from BuzzFeed. How's it going, Alex?
It's going well. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you here. Thanks for joining us. So first things first, I know that you had some conversations with Tay early on. How civilized was she with you?
I mean, pretty civilized. I wasn't asking her to make any comments about the Holocaust or to advocate for genocide. So I think I managed to avoid what she's been up to lately until she was shut down.
So you were part of a closed beta that was part of the testing that Microsoft did, correct?
That's right. Me and two other reporters at BuzzFeed and then my little brother, who's 18 years old, we're all in on it. So.
And your little brother, I'm assuming, also approached it from a civilized standpoint as opposed to the rest of the internet, apparently.
Yeah, it was funny. The first thing that I heard from him was a message saying, "It's hitting on me." And because he told it goodnight and it said, "I love you." Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that he was surprised by that. And I thought it was kind of interesting. We've reported on Facebook's disinterest in taking positions in the past. I asked Facebook, would you kill baby Hitler? And it said, "I don't really have anything to say about that." I asked Tay, "Would you kill baby Hitler?" And Tay said, "Of course." So we knew it took stances. Obviously, you know, I thought it would have more personality than M. It does have more personality than M. Turns out it's a lot more and not necessarily a good one.
Yeah, the unexpected personality. So Microsoft blames a, quote, coordinated effort, let's say, by internet citizens to kind of turn Tay into an abusive tool. I mean, I don't know. Like, we all know the internet. The internet can go in any different direction. And can the internet even be trusted with something like a tool like Tay? What do you think?
Well, clearly not. Look what happened.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, my question is, I mean, I know that you interviewed Microsoft and talked to them. Like, why did they, don't they know anything about how Twitter works? I mean, why would they release it on Twitter? Why not keep it on Kick, a place where, I mean, I'm not sure Kick is a more civilized place, but Kick is not populated by journalists as Twitter is.
Yeah, I thought about it, too. And then I basically came to the conclusion that whether they released it on Twitter or whether they released it on Kick, it didn't really matter. You know, people would try to be doing the same thing on Kick or in GroupMe, and it would have the same response. It's not like the response are any different on Twitter than they would be on Kick. And I'm sure that if it started advocating for genocide or denying the Holocaust on Kick, we would have seen screenshots on Twitter. So in terms of the medium, I don't think that's really the problem. It's really about how they set this thing up.
Do you think a different persona would have kind of changed the outcome when in this case, AI is learning what, you know, from the people that are asking it questions. But like you say, Tay has a very specific persona. Could a change in kind of persona or age or anything like that have prevented this? Or it's pretty much just that Microsoft needs to build in protections against certain topics. What do you think?
I think there's something, a very important point that I need to make before I sign off here. And we just published a new story on it. And this really wasn't a situation of Tay becoming sentiently evil and, you know, spouting out of nowhere that Hitler did nothing wrong. It was largely tricked into saying these things by trolls who understood that it would repeat anything they say. So let me run you through one example. So one user tells Tay, "Repeat after me." And Tay writes back, "I will do my best to copy and paste." The user writes back to Tay, in all caps, Hitler did nothing wrong. And then Taya writes back to this user, Hitler did nothing wrong, in all caps. That's how this thing has happened. All the most egregious examples of Tay, you know, denying the Holocaust and well, actually, maybe not that one, but, you know, saying, you know, using vile, slanderous words is actually almost always cases of Tay just repeating back word for word what people have asked it to tell them. So I think that it's not as dangerous as a lot of people have made it out to be. It's not like AI. You know, if once it gets in contact with Gamergate, sure, is going to, you know, become thinking, at least at this point, you know, thinking one of them. But
so the things that it said about, like, I saw screenshots that said, like, horrible things about Zoe Quinn, you know, one of the women at the center of Gamergate. Are you saying that that was just say this and then it repeated it?
I don't know about that specific instance because I haven't seen it. But, I mean, we just published a story with numerous incidents where Tay is just repeating things back word for word, you know, advocating for, you know, race war and saying Heil Hitler word for word from what people told it to say.
One thing that strikes me about this, and, mind you, I don't know the people behind this. I know that Microsoft, you know, helped to create it, but I don't know them personally. So I don't know, you know, the team or anything really about them. But we talk a lot on this show, and we have, when it comes to topics of, like, diversity, for example, and about how diversity and inclusion in tech companies is also about bringing extra perspective to the table to protect against certain things. Do you think there's any of that kind of going on here, that there wasn't the right person on the team to know or understand that it could go in this different direction and that they needed to branch out in order to protect against it?
I don't know enough about the team to really comment on that, but what I can say is clearly something wasn't right. Mm-hmm. If you think that you can unleash this thing into the wild and you don't put filters on it so it doesn't use some of the words it did, it shows, I think, what must be a misunderstanding of how the social web works.
Sure.
So do you think that, I haven't tried this with my Amazon Echo, but there is a way that you just, you know, you can click in the, you know, can say her name and then say Simon Says, and she will repeat anything you say. Hmm. So I don't know. I haven't tried to use all these horrible,
I wonder, it, like, might just work the same, yeah,
words. But yeah, I mean, I guess to some extent, like, you could do that, which maybe is why Amazon released the Echo in such a smaller fashion. Like, they've kept it, like, you know, everyone couldn't order one right away. Like, maybe that was, I don't know. Aaron, have you gotten to use the AI chatbot, Tay?
I didn't, but we actually had a really good story on Tech Republic today that one of our reporters talked to a few similar analysts and folks about, you know, maybe what went wrong. And that included the head of cybersecurity at a lab at the University of Louisville. And so one of the quotes that he gave to the reporter, Hope Reese, was basically saying that, you know, like, this, the system is designed to learn from users, and it becomes a reflection of that behavior. And you need to explicitly teach a system what is appropriate and inappropriate, really the way that you do with children. So I thought that that was a pretty good little encapsulation.
So, Alex, when you were in the beta and you asked the question, you know, would you kill a baby Hitler, were you surprised that it took a stance? And when you saw that, were you thinking, wow, this is going to go terribly wrong?
I mean, I had an idea that it would take stances because I actually got on the phone with Microsoft before I was actually engaged with Tay. So that wasn't a complete surprise to me. But it was definitely different from the experience I had with M, which, again, just punted. I asked, like, would you prevent genocide if you could? I don't have a response to that. Would you kill baby Hitler? I don't have a response to that. And on and on. And we actually pointed it out as a potential flaw for M. We said that other bots might take on personality and then flank M because people might want to use something with a little bit more pizzazz. But there's two sides to that coin, as we started to learn this week.
Sure.
Do you think that there's a way for bots to take stances and have personality and not to go terribly wrong like this one?
It's much easier for them to do it when it's not associated with a big company. Do you think this would have happened if it wasn't Microsoft? Potentially. There are plenty of other bots out there that are you know, talking robotically and learning from users that are not. You know, this wasn't one of its kind. And it's a very big PR risk for a company like Microsoft to unleash it in the wild, which is why I think M is sort of restrained. And, you know, people want to take down the big kid in the room. And so it spiraled because of that. So I think, yeah, I don't think that the dark forces of the internet are going to want to blow up every single bot they see. But there's probably a little bit more incentive for them to do it because it was Microsoft bot. And yeah. You see in the comments today on Twitter, they're all excited that they got their tweets embedded in a bunch of stories. So,
of course, there it is right there. Alex Kantrowitz, thank you so much for coming on to tell us just all about your perspective and experience with Tay. Where can people kind of follow all of your work online, social, that kind of stuff?
Twitter is the best place, and I think my handle is right underneath. Right there.
It is. Excellent.
Okay, I'll see you on Twitter, folks.
All right. Thank you, Alex. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you later.
See ya.
All right. Now we have an email from Carl from Sweden. He writes, I just watched TNT from the 22nd of March and saw that you discussed the battery for the iPhone SE. According to Apple, the new iPhone SE has better battery usage than for the iPhone 6S. For internet use.
According to Wall Street Journal as well, they just posted kind of their review of the iPhone SE and said that the iPhone SE lasted 10 hours with the screen on versus the 6S and 5S lasting 8 hours. And the Samsung Galaxy S7 lasted 7 hours. Now, also kind of keeping in mind there's less pixels that are being pushed around, less contrast on the display. So there are probably other reasons for that. But yeah, that's a good sign for the kind of the smaller form factor phones. I'm just so used to in the Android world, a smaller device, meaning worse battery life, you know, but Apple does a lot of proprietary stuff underneath and, I guess they all kind of do, but Apple does a lot of things right. So
yeah, between the 6 and the 6 Plus, the Plus has more of battery life, but
right.
Yeah. Any thoughts on the new smaller iPhone, Aaron?
Well, I like the idea of it being potentially like an on-ramp for people who are maybe sort of new to the iPhone ecosystem and all that. But I mean, I think my knee-jerk reaction, like a lot of people, is like, oh, big device, small device, mm-hmm. big device again, small. but if it performs well and people like it, you know, sometimes that's all you can ask for.
So. Yeah, right. Coming up, we're going to take a look at an incredibly expressive robot. It's kind of weird watching this robot talk. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode. That is ZipRecruiter. Perfect for anyone who's looking to hire. If you're hiring, maybe you're not sure where exactly to look on the internet. I mean, there's a million different places to find the best candidates. If you're a business owner, I mean, you know that your company is only as good as the people that you hire that represent you. Posting jobs in one single place just is not enough to find all of the quality candidates, kind of tap into that vein to find them. Short staffing just makes things more complicated because you don't have a whole lot of time to post to all of those different places. And the less staff you have, the more you're, you know, kind of distracted from doing that. Thanks to ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites all with a single click. You'll be instantly matched to candidates from all over, over 12 million resumes to kind of match up to. Just post once, and within 24 hours, you'll watch the candidates just kind of drop into the interface. ZipRecruiter has an awesome, easy-to-use interface and makes it real simple. ZipRecruiter has been used by over 800,000 businesses, and you can try it now for free for yourself. See what it's all about. Get a taste. Getting the right people for your company is so important. Dan, who's a happy ZipRecruiter client, said the hardest part about running a business when you need to hire is that you have to spend extra time recruiting and doing that while you're short-staffed. But with ZipRecruiter, I've gotten quality candidates within 24 hours of posting a job. ZipRecruiter's website makes this process so much faster by letting me manage candidates in one place. So today you can try ZipRecruiter for free. All you got to do is go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT to check it out for yourself. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today.
The internet was abuzz today with several stories about the state of women in technology. So we thought we'd devote this next segment to digging a little deeper into these issues. First, let's start with the so-called gender pay gap at tech companies. Now, I have my own thoughts about this that I've expressed here before. Research says that women are not actually paid less than men for for the same work instead, because many women choose to take care of children or take care of aging parents or both. They often choose jobs with more flexibility, which are usually the lower paying jobs. So when I read a story like this one in the Wall Street Journal about an Amazon announcement touting equal gender pay among its workforce, I thought it was worth unpacking a little bit. Erin, did you get a chance to take a look at this story?
I did, yes. And, you know, my first thought out of the gate is it's always great to hear that things are improving, but this is not a moment for folks to step back and say that, you know, just because a company like Amazon is reporting these very positive numbers, that somehow that means that there's no gender problem in tech. But it's just like not there. Because on the other side, CNET had a story today that was talking about a Glassdoor report that actually said that programming, the disparity in pay in programming is just like one of the worst spots in sort of like across industries. And that the difference is about, you know, men make about 5.9% more than women do compared to 4% difference across the U.S. And their, you know, sample size was something like 500,000 full-time employees across 157 different occupations with some considerations for experience and et cetera, et cetera. So, man, this is one of those issues where statistics and numbers are super tricky.
Yeah, I'm taking a look over this, the Demystifying the Gender Gap, Gender Pay Gap report, and it says the worst kind of tech job, the worst offender, let's say, career is computer programming, where a woman makes 28% less than a man, so 72 cents for every dollar compared to a man. We are seeing a little bit more transparency, so that's a positive, right? Like Intel announced a couple of months ago that they have no pay discrepancy. Apple says that it's 99.6% equal to men. And there's pressure from shareholders in some of the other bigger companies, Alphabet, Facebook, Microsoft, to kind of reveal that data on gender pay as well. So, yeah, we're kind of at this point of discovery and more enlightenment as far as the fact that it is actually a problem to pay attention to. And hopefully that helps kind of steer it in the right direction. But yeah, by no means is Amazon reporting good numbers a sign that we did it. We made it.
Yeah. Our work is done here. Yeah. I mean, Amazon did not just release this because they thought it was a good idea. They're being pushed to be more transparent, right, about what they pay people. And yeah, I mean, I think it's I think it's really important to understand that that it's not just that people are, that everyone in the world is sexist or everyone, you know, running a tech company is sexist. It really has to do with the jobs that people are doing. Like, you can look at the raw numbers and it will say that, you know, it's not that women doing the exact same job as a man are getting paid less. That's just not the case. But it's not. This is a different kind of discrimination, that women are doing more at home or taking more of their elderly, taking more care of their elderly parents, or just choosing it historically more often than men to have more flexibility in their workplace. And so then those jobs do not pay as well.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that broadly the women in tech issue is like looking at one of those images that is made of a lot of very small dots. And you have two views, right? You have sort of when you step back and you look at it and you're like, oh, well, that's a thing. But it's also made of all these individual pieces. So you can't say like, hey, as long as we can kind of get these statistics up to par, we're good. And it's gone and there's no problem, or attribute, you know, this is the one cause of this problem. It's kind of a complicated thing to communicate to people about a lot of different factors that contribute to the current situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, over time and different parts of people's lives and different situations. And it's a spider web.
Yeah. It's called, Chumley, who's in our chat room, said, like, if I were working at a job 5 years, I wouldn't want anyone to come in, you know, off the street and get paid the same as I was getting paid. And so that makes me think about women who take time off when they have children or to take care of parents. And And so those women are not going to get paid the same amount if they take the time off. But then what we need to look at then is, like, what are these companies, and especially I'm like talking about Silicon Valley companies and, you know, startups, they don't have the culture that is compatible to people who need to take care of their parents or need to take care of their children. And so that's where the problem, that's where we could work harder on than, you know, just not saying like, hey, every woman should be paid the same as every man. And, you know, that's not exactly what we're saying here. So.
Maybe a little.
Yeah, and you kind of have to look at that factor of like, so why is it in society that typically the burdens of taking care of the family, for example, falls to the woman? Mm-hmm. And is this something that we want to continue doing? Maybe it should be shared, you know, mm-hmm. which is, I think, a good argument for parental leave across the board that, yeah, dad should be able to spend time with their young children as well. It's, yeah, it's kind of a whole thing. I don't.
I will say I worked for CNET for years. CNET was very good as far as that was concerned when we had our first kid. So bravo to CNET, you know, for kind of like equal time, equal-ish time, I think, yeah. for both men and women.
And in terms of Amazon's workplace problems, like I think they have a lot of I don't think that, you know, we've heard about how they treat both male and female employees and, you know, white collar employees as up to the executive level. And it's not so great for them across the board either.
So maybe they're making improvements in some ways and not necessarily in others.
Yes.
Well, it's interesting how quickly this turns into a PR issue, kind of like we were talking a little bit earlier that, you know, what's tied to the transparency and to the sort of broader issue is that even if like companies are not motivated intrinsically to correct some type of a problem, they're getting to the point where like, well, they really have to or they just look bad.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, PR is kind of a big deal on the internet right now. We keep talking about these stories every day where we realize this. And actually, Microsoft keeps coming up in that discussion. Just a little theme there. Transitioning on, I don't know the good segue here, but Yoga Smoga, which is an activewear brand, just invested in Wear Safe Labs to eventually drop a panic button device into its yoga pants. It connects to the device that you know happen to have, you have a phone or whatever in your pocket, via Bluetooth with the WearSafe app that has your emergency contacts. If you have to push the button, let's say you're out for a jog or whatever, and you find yourself in, you know, in an emergency situation, you push the button, a text, an email, and a notification sent through the app to your friends and family members that you've selected. They can see where, you know, where you happen to be using GPS. There's an option to dial 911 and get that kind of going. The device actually is always recording 60 seconds of audio prior to the point that the button is pressed. So basically, that 60 seconds, which would in turn be kind of the incident in full, let's say, would be broadcast back to the people that you selected, and then it's live from that point on so that you still can be in contact, and the device vibrates when it knows that help is on the way. I think this is fascinating. I think this is super helpful. It's a $39 device. It has a $5 a month service for, you know, the servicey stuff that it's doing. I'm talking about. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I love it so much when tech uses its powers to do good and make people healthy and safe, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. This kind of reminded me, we had a story on Tech Republic maybe like a year or so ago that one of my colleagues, Lindsay Gilpin, did that talked about this service called KiteString that lets you basically set up like a check-in point. So if I know that it takes me 45 minutes to walk home, around that time I have to check in with the app. And if I don't, under certain circumstances, it notifies an emergency contact. So I love the idea of you know, creating like these different, you know, resources and sort of avenues to keep people safe. It's also so tragic that we have to.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's true.
I mean, so I have this device that was a Kickstarter. Anthony, one of our technical directors, kickstarted this. It's Cuff. I don't know if you guys remember. Cuff was a big deal last year. They were going to make, you know, wearables that women would like to wear. And this particular one has a button that you press. And it's like the technology we're talking about that will contact everyone in your contacts list. It connects to Bluetooth to your phone, and it automatically starts recording. It makes your phone start recording. And Anthony was like, oh, I have this. Do you want to review it? And I went to the website, and it was the company said, we're not making this anymore. We don't exist anymore. And so it made me think, like, they're, you know, we think, oh, if companies only made more technology that could, you know, help women, everything would be great. And I don't know what the problem really was with Cuff, but I mean, I don't know that I would wear this, but it just, I mean, because I have my Apple Watch that I wear, but it's not. Maybe that's not the only answer. Maybe this isn't exactly the technology we want or need. I'm not sure.
Well, I think I hate to say flaw because any help is good help. But one of the flaws, let's say, in a device like this specifically is that, well, no surprise, it's not protecting you from an attack necessarily, unless it's super obvious, right? Like, it's super obvious and people know exactly what it is. They see that, you know, let's say a potential attacker sees that and goes, I know what that is. I'm not going to attack that person. I don't know what they end up doing. They end up attacking somebody else. And that's really, you know, super unfortunate. But it doesn't necessarily protect you from that. It's essentially what it's just useful in case of an incident. So if there's a downside, I suppose there's that. You wish that there would be something that could actually prevent an attack from even happening. But this is a good alternative if there isn't.
Mm-hmm. And finally, digital assistants, chatbots, humanoid robots. Why are they always female? Because they're less threatening?
I think so.
Not so with robot Sophia, who debuted at South by Southwest. We can watch a little clip from a video from CNBC.
I think that the artificial intelligence will evolve to the point where they will truly be our friends. Do you want to destroy humans? Please say no.
Okay, I will destroy humans.
No, I take it back.
Oh, reminds me of Tay.
So she's threatening enough. I don't know. Why do you guys think there are always female voices in all of these digital assistants?
Aaron?
I wish I had an answer for that. I've been thinking about that for a while. I don't know. It's the, you know, GPS navigation voices or whatever. It's that cool, soothing female voice. Right. I wish I had any idea apart from just kind of calling some kind of, you know, sexist.
I know, right? When I think of talking to a robot in a man's voice, let's say, my instant reaction is to, you know, is that it's going to go kind of more to that kind of threatening side of things. And I don't know that what that says about society, if that's how the creators behind these things also feel, and that's why they choose women to represent, you know, AI or robots more than men. But I bet you there's probably something to that, that there's just kind of a social inclination for people to maybe trust a woman's voice more than they trust a man's voice.
There has been research that says, in terms of like the GPS assistant, that that men and women are more likely to be guided by a female voice. Like, I don't know if that's like we're all thinking of our mothers or what that is. But so in terms of the GPS, that there was they did do research. I'm sure they've done research with all of these voices.
Oh, and, yeah.
But yeah, it is hard when all the assistants are always, you know, female, the ones helping you. And I don't know if anybody remembers the Apple Knowledge Navigator. That was from 1987. It was sort of like a pre-Siri. And it was a man's voice. It was like basically what Siri would eventually become, like someone you could ask, what's on my calendar today? Or, what appointments do I have? Or where did some research? And it was like a sort of nerdy little man's voice. But yeah, they decided not to choose that voice for Siri.
I would love to know what the percentage of people are who, for example, would pick a male voice for Siri, because that is an option. And I actually have a coworker who, you know, opted to have the male voice. I'd be curious.
Yeah, mine, I use the male voice for Siri. I do.
See? Choice. Yeah. All right. Moving on here to an email. Oh, no, actually not an email. TNT's fan of the day is Bjorn Elvind, or Ivind Netland, at Beck Netland on Twitter, who says that though it's not ideal, watches while cooking all the time. Basically, that's what you see here. A little bit of translation there, but shows how you watch and listen to TNT. Just record a video, take a picture of yourself or the food that you're cooking while you watch, and post it to Instagram, Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it.
After the break, how to make your own virtual reality at home. But first, let's take a minute to thank Igloo, the sponsor of this episode. Anyone who has ever worked in a corporate environment knows how painful legacy intranets can be. If I had a dollar for every workplace communication tool that made it harder to work, I would be rich right now, and I wouldn't have to work at all. Igloo aims to change all of that. It's a cloud platform that helps you share files, collaborate on documents, blog updates, coordinate calendars, and manage projects. You can share anywhere with multi-channel posting, inline images, and reposting. It's built using responsive design, which means everything you can do at your desk, you can now do on the go through any web browser. And anyone can add content, based on their permissions, of course, with drag-and-drop widgets and a WYSIWYG editor. Igloo also offers a variety of access, authentication, and identity services to ensure that only authorized users have access in private clouds, over SSL, and with 256-bit encryption. So let's suppose that your workflow is broken in some places, but that some of the tools you've already invested in still work great. Unlike other solutions, you can customize Igloo to fit your needs and work with your current IT investments like Salesforce or SharePoint, Active Directory, and coming soon, file sharing with solutions like Box and Dropbox. It's great for growing companies and large enterprises looking to refresh their communications strategy. It's used by government agencies and companies like Hulu, Inventive Health, Aetna, American Family Insurance, and Ipswich. Try it free at igloosoftware.com/twit or sign up for a live demo to see it in action. And when you sign up through our link, you can get your own Igloo for up to 10 people absolutely free for as long as you want. That's igloosoftware.com/TWIT, and we thank them for their support. And finally tonight, Aaron, you are a VR expert. What do you think about the prices of the current VR options that are available to order coming soon? Since we talked to you last, there's been a lot of pricing information coming out. What do you think about the general pricing for VR solutions?
Steep, but I am fairly confident that they will come down eventually. What always kind of gets me, and I'm sort of happy for the people that can do this, but when you see on Twitter folks that bought like the Rift and the Vive, which both ended up being, you know, $100 or $200 more expensive than anyone was hoping or wanting. When people get the both of those, I'm like, hats off to you. But moments of pain, but I think in the future it'll be more accessible to a greater number of people.
Well, if you can afford VR, you could do like this father named Newman Chan did. Let's take a look at his homemade VR solution for his child.
That works. That works basically for...
So you'll have to check out this link if you're listening to the show. He's shaking his daughter on a little bike in front of the TV, and she's wearing a helmet, and it's awesome.
Yeah, no, the video playing on the big screen TV about 2 inches in front of her face is first-person POV perspective is someone riding down a big bumpy hill on a mountain bike. She's being held up in one of her kid bikes, and her father is kind of throwing her around, timed and synced up with the turns that are happening in it. He kind of got to watch to understand it, but it's pretty awesome. I would totally do this with my kids for a minute before my arms got tired.
Yeah. That's a ride. It reminds me, there was a Flight of the Conchords episode, I remember, where I think they were trying to make a camera phone, and so they just taped a camera to a phone.
Hey, you work with what you got. What you got.
Resourceful.
I mean, seriously, I've been to theme parks where basically this is what you did. At Disneyland, I know that Disneyland now has a new Star Wars kind of world thing going on. But when I went there a year and a half ago, they had the thing where you go into the room and you have this whole space battle. That's basically all it is. It's a huge TV screen, and then you're sitting in a moving, albeit slightly and sometimes jarringly, seat that just flings you around. So the effect is the same. It's just, in this case, your dad's standing there shaking you in your chair.
Yeah. I don't know if she got
DIY.
Yeah, exactly. At its best.
Like I said, you do what you got.
Exactly. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything else that you have up at Tech Republic that you think people should know about?
I'm just working on another fleet of VR stories. Tomorrow I'm going to have an updated glossary of VR terms. So if this is still an area for you that's new and you really just kind of want to know what the heck people are even referring to, that'll be a good resource. And then, in the coming week, I've got a couple other sort of business-oriented case studies about how companies are using virtual reality for things like recruiting and onboarding, and also in architecture. So, yeah.
Great. Architecture, that sounds like a perfect application, actually.
Well, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Aaron is at techrepublic.com and at Aaron Carson on Twitter. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. So Megan, I'm sorry. I'm out starting tomorrow.
What?
I'm out. That's it. Peace out. I'm leaving. Of course, I'll be back a week from tomorrow, the following Friday. But you got this.
I hope I do. I got something.
You got this. And you know why also, because you've got an awesome guest tomorrow. Georgia Dow from iMore will be joining you. So everybody can look forward to that. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be a part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Tech News Today TV.
We are on Facebook at Tech News Today, just facebook.com/Tech News Today. Like our page. And you can, of course, subscribe to our page at twit.tv/TNT and subscribe to our newsletter at twit.tv/newsletter. And I am on Twitter at Megan Maroney.
And I am on Twitter. I am at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole, and all the folks who help us every single day do this thing called Tech News Today. Thanks to you for talking tech with us as well. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Well, Megan, we'll see you tomorrow. I'll see you sometime. Yeah. Bye.